Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You worked all week.
Work.
You didn't have time to look at your fantasy lineups.
Son of a...
But don't be afraid.
That's why we give you Weekend Fantasy Update.
Woohoo! Working on
now, welcome to another edition of Weekend Fantasy Update, a scorching edition, a late July scorching summer edition of Weekend Fantasy Update. Thanks for joining us this morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm your host, Mike Blewett, and I'm here along with my compadre, George Kurtz. George, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Mike. You know, one thing I love about this show, Mike, I never know who the host is going to be. I show up each morning and say, hey, could be Joe, could be Mike, Jim Day,
like to mix it up.
Cam, Mike McDonald.
Keeps you on your toes.
Nothing would surprise me.
Keeps you on your toes. I won't be here next week either. I'm playing in my annual baseball tournament, but well, I'll get into that a little bit later. I'm not feeling good about my off-season program, so I don't think it's going to go well.
You're not in the best shape of your career?
I am not. Bone spurs, plagued by bone spurs and other ailments. It is not going to look good next weekend down in Annapolis, so we can get into that a little bit later in the show. But... look, the story for us personally is that I can't remember a time when it's been this hot in New York. Seeing the Yankees trot out there for yesterday's game was, I had a moment, a flicker of sympathy for those guys being out there in that weather. It's we saw heat indexes. I saw some people posting on social media heat indexes approaching 115 in this area with like a 98 degrees solid. In New York. So it's brutal. It's hot all up and down the East Coast. And obviously, you know, we're seeing it impact baseball in some ways. But I guess to start with the Yankees, because we can go a million different directions. Yesterday was the type of day, or really the last couple of days, were the types of games where it's like, all right, coming off this emotional comeback against the Rays, and they swept them in the doubleheader. You thought Friday night, you know, Boone's not there. They could take a day off. And maybe take an L, but they get the win. And Encarnacion's grand slam drives them. Then yesterday, you're like, all right, it's hot. They're probably a little tired. It's been an exhausting week. They got all these games against the Rays, against the Sox, and boom, 11-5 victory. The bats are on fire, and they are starting to turn into this runaway freight train. Now, I think you and I would agree it really doesn't matter because we just got to get to October and have to add another pitcher in the process. But pretty impressive what they've been doing here for the last since the All-Star break.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Listen, it's been a pretty impressive season overall for the Yankees when you consider all the injuries they've had. And I'm not going to go through them, but I think they've had, 23 guys on the IL, including almost every major player. All right, so it's been very impressive. Shows you the good job Cashman has done, the depth he built, really having players behind players behind players. And good for those younger guys to come up and play. The Urshelas who look like they were busted prospects. All the young guys who have come up, Vitalmans, guys like that. Cameron Mabin, who's played well. And you go on and on and on with the Yankee players. So in some ways, they don't have another important game now until October. Yeah, they're going to win the division. They're 10 games up on Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay and Boston aren't even in playoff spots right now. People don't realize that. They're not in the wild card spots anymore. I believe that's Cleveland and Oakland off end. So like I said, their biggest goal now is the home field would be nice. Make Houston. I think Houston's the next best team. Make Houston come to Yankee Stadium rather than play four games at Minute Maid. And other than that, like you said, get another pitcher. They need another starting pitcher here, whether it's Stroman, Bumgarner, Bauer. Hearing Bauer's very strong with San Diego. They want him badly. Stroman pitched 7 innings of shutout ball the other day. Cam and I believe he should have never gone 7 innings. I don't know why Toronto's not protecting him. 6 innings shutout ball, get him out of there. And you're not trying to win games anymore. You're just trying to get the value up for Stroman. Bumgarner, can the Giants trade him now? They're 2.5 games out of the wild card, playing well, regardless of the fact they screwed you yesterday in your fantasy league. So it is what it is right now.
Yeah, so George is referencing, I tried to steal a start out of Jeff Samardzija yesterday, and the Mets had scored one run in 26 innings in their previous two games against the Giants, and I'm like, all right, they're floundering here. Let me get a start. Samardzija had pitched solid. The previous two starts, I believe he had pitched solid, so I figured I'd get that, as George mentioned to me before the show. Pete Alonso was out of the lineup, so let's see what we can do here. Nope. Mets bats come alive. They win the game 11-4. Trust the process, not the results.
That's exactly right. That's exactly how I would look at it. Sometimes, listen, we make all the right decisions. We made the right choices, and we analyzed everything correctly. Everything went well. Results didn't work out. What's the old saying? That's why games aren't played on paper. You know, these are human beings sometimes. I mean, listen, the Mets hadn't scored. They scored, 3 runs in the previous 27 innings against San Fran, 2 extra inning games. Alonso was out of the lineup. It was an easy choice to go with San Fran yesterday. I mean, Cam Stewart and I talked about it on Weekend Wager. If you were going to bet, you were going to bet the Mets game. Now, I don't bet the Mets. The Mets have screwed me all year long. So I stayed away from that game. I don't bet the unders anymore. I just don't trust the Mets. They just, like I said, I think they have something personal against me as far as betting is concerned. But everything said to point to bet the Giants, to play the Giants. And, you know, it didn't work out. Sometimes, no matter what you do, you can do everything right, but the results just come out wrong. That's life.
Yeah. Yeah. Samardzija goes 5 innings yesterday. He gives up 4 runs. He had 7 strikeouts, but he gave him 6 hits, a couple of homers. So it wasn't the worst outing of his career, but he just didn't pitch well enough. And the Mets stack up 11 runs on the Giants yesterday, putting an end to their 7-game winning streak. They had won 14 of 16 and 7 in a row. So still, as George said, they're back in the mix. We thought the Giants were – in fact, we talked here, I want to say it was 2 weeks ago, like right around the July 4th weekend. And – we said there's only really 2 teams in the whole National League, probably 3, that are definite sellers. And the Giants were one of them, and now they're not. So do they scrounge for that wild card game? We talked about this, too. You have to have integrity about what kind of team you actually are. Are they better off unloading all of these assets and building for the future, or – should they try and scrap for what they think is a competitive team with some scrappy veterans on there, Posey and Crawford, and you know, you can go on. But realistically, I know what the choice I would make. I don't need to make an effort to make a 1-game playoff in baseball. I just don't do it. I wouldn't do it. So that's where my head is at. But where is the Giants' head at? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think this is – people forget that more than just what you're saying comes into this. And what I mean by that, in a vacuum, I completely agree with you. I mean, you're going to make a 1-game playoff. You have to know – you have to come to that come-to-Jesus moment. You're not a very good team. Okay? You're playing well right now. Yeah, maybe you'll squeeze into that wild card and you'll get bounced in that 1-game playoff. Or maybe Bumgarner does pitch well and you still get bounced in the divisional series. Whatever it is, you're not really a World Series contender. Now, that being said, you know – what's your goal here? If your goal is just to make the playoffs at all costs, well, then you do what you got to do. I'm not making any major acquisitions, mind you, but maybe I don't trade Bumgarner. I don't trade Will Smith. Even though long-term, I have to truly believe that's the best thing for the team, trading Bumgarner, trade Will Smith, two guys who will get you back a good haul of prospects here. So I would deal them. But I always say this, Matt, Mike, we forget about real-life implications. Maybe the general manager has an edict from April, March, whatever it is. You make the playoffs, you're done. In this case, the general manager doesn't care about next year. Doesn't care about 2 years down the line. He knows if he doesn't get – he doesn't make the playoffs now, he's fired. So what does he care about trading prospects away? Doesn't care. Or it could be the exact opposite. The general manager, his job is secure for the next 5 years. He can play the long game and trade Bumgarner, trade Will Smith, build up for the future because his job is safe. We forget about this all the time. And the human nature plays a part in this. I don't think there's any doubt about that, about if it's is your job on the line or not. Same thing with a manager. You know, you're managing for today, you're managing for next year, you're managing to get better. Yeah, it's very tough to manage for the future if you know, hey, you're not going to be a part of it if you don't win now. So it's a tough game they play. And I think also owners forget that too when they make these edicts, that you're forcing guys to make decisions for the short term rather than what may be beneficial overall for the team for the long term.
Yeah. Farhan Zaidi is their president of baseball operations. He's just hired earlier this year. I read a huge article on him in Sports Business Journal. It was very much an exploration of how analytics heavy some teams have become. He was a standout student at Cal Berkeley. I think he was working on a PhD. He read Moneyball, and then he just wanted to get involved in baseball. And it was a really cool story. I highly recommend if you can search it down. I'll see if I can find it, and I'll tweet it out on Twitter. My handle is at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz, by the way. So I think he obviously has some stability there, I would think. And my guess is he would pile up assets if given the chance. But it's just funny how these win streaks can throw you off of what your intended plan was. So just to give you some stats from that game, I mentioned Samardzija. Lockett gets the win for the Mets. He throws five innings, only gives up the one run on the Mets. Rosario, 3-for-4, two runs scored. Dom Smith coming back after a rough Friday night. 3-for-5, one run scored. He has four RBIs and a grand slam. Let's see, Todd Frazier, 2-for-4, three runs scored, RBI. And then McNeil, 2-for-5, still hitting .345. Man, 2-for-5, two runs scored, two RBIs. I think he's still leading the majors in batting average at .345. So good on him. By the way, the obvious, Friday night, we don't need to rehash it. I'm sure you guys talked about it yesterday. The Mets losing on that botched fly ball. Dominic Smith shouldn't be in left field in the first place. You've said it on here many times. Their defense is horrendous. Many guys are playing out of position regularly. But, the odd thing about it, and maybe you guys brought it up yesterday, people are focused on Dom Smith. If everybody's in the right place on the relay, they still have a chance of getting the guy out at home.
Listen, the guy should not score from first base on a pop fly to 20 feet behind the shortstop.
Yeah.
It just shouldn't happen. Even if he dropped the ball, it should not happen. And this is a credit to the runner, who I forget who it was right now, for hustling. He was running the whole way. God bless. You don't see that in baseball that much. But he was running the entire way.
Teixeira in that interleague game against the Mets.
Not really. That was a much easier catch for Luis Castillo. This was a difficult's the wrong term, but it wasn't an easy catch. Dominic Smith, it's San Fran. He had to come a long way. It's one of those tweeners. And Smith never got a glove on the ball. Once again, he's not an outfielder.
Admittedly, a tougher play. I'm just saying Teixeira running hard all the way.
Yeah. It's tough on Dominic Smith. For doing, he's not an outfielder. He's the kind of guy you could stick in the outfield if you have a very good center field, a very good right field. Okay, maybe Fenway Park. Yankee Stadium, that's fine. Put him in right field, fine. Let's face it, Yankee Stadium, the ball's hit over your head, it's generally gone. Who cares? So you can play short there. So that's what's the thing. But in, Citi Field, San Fran, those are big outfields. And he has down to the cover that kind of ground. He's going to make mistakes. He probably should have caught the ball. It looks like he did call it for Rosario. Maybe Rosario could have caught it. Maybe there was some confusion about colliding with each other and business decisions were made there, that sort of thing. The bottom line is the ball should have been caught. The game should have never ended that way. And you're right. If the relay is handled correctly, either the runner stops at third or he's dead at the plate anyway, but that didn't happen either. Mets are a cluster right now. They have so many guys playing out of position.
Ramos is standing just watching it unfold. And if he's standing on the inside of the plate, the throw to home from the relay, which was basically somewhere between shortstop and the pitcher's mound, was online. I'm not saying he definitely would have got him, but Ramos could have put a tag on him and made it a play. Instead, the ball just got fired into the dugout, basically, because nobody was standing at home.
It was strange. It was just strange. It's not really because of this kind of defense, but, we know that Thor and DeGrom don't like throwing to him. I know it's not for this. It's more for framing and that sort of thing than this kind of play here. But Ramos is not a very good defensive catcher. He's not. He never really has been. This is why, the Mets pitchers prefer throwing to Nito. Like I said, not for that play, but more for framing and how he handles the pitching staff. And you're hearing that the Mets wouldn't mind trading Ramos, but we were also hearing there's very little interest. Most contending teams aren't looking for a catcher. And it's not like they don't know that Ramos has these issues.
Okay, sure. Real quick, to go back to the Yankees stats, 3-for-4 for LeMahieu, two runs scored. Guy's unbelievable. 334. Judge, 1-for-3, has an RBI. Encarnacion, three more RBIs, 2-for-5 there. And you had Gregorius 2-for-5. Didi up to 261 now. Two runs scored. Gleyber Torres 3-for-5. Austin Romine 2-for-5. Gardner, the only one, with a tough day yesterday at 0-for-3. Charlie Blackmo, the hit and run scored. Trevor Story 2-for-4 runs scored. Arenado hit a home run yesterday. He had 3 RBIs on the day. So as far as the pitching was concerned, Tanaka 6 innings, 5 runs scored. Look, the conditions were brutal. I don't think any starters were going to have an easy day yesterday. Sensatella goes 1 1/3. He got shellacked for 6 runs. So Tanaka gets the win. Not his prettiest win, but we've seen that before with him. He kind of guts it out, and even if he's giving up runs and homers, he's able to get the win.
Exactly. And today's going to be very similar for starters around the brown baseball. It'll be very warm again today, and some places even warmer than yesterday.
Yeah, now come back. We'll talk a little bit more about yesterday's games, but we'll get into those trade rumors. We didn't mention Zach Greinke during all of this, so we'll come right back after this.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
More cowbell. The dog days of summer are here, and you can pad your account before football season. Swing for the fences playing daily fantasy baseball at dailyroto.com. Become the 8th Daily Roto lineup optimizer user to win $1 million in a FanDuel or DraftKings tournament, or become one of the countless number of people who have won thousands of dollars playing DFS. If you're playing MLB DFS and you're not using dailyroto.com, you're doing it wrong. So enter the promo code FNTSY for a 10% discount, and you'll get lineup alerts, projected ownership percentages, weather updates, fantasy projections, and use of the same Daily Roto lineup optimizers that have produced millions in DFS winnings. That's the 2019 MLB Daily Roto Premium Package at DailyRoto.com. Use promo code FNTSY and get your 10% discount today. So we can keep talking about games, but I came across an article this morning as I was kind of getting ready, reviewing things, and it's by Andrew Simon of Major League Baseball, and it's titled Seven Teams That Should Go Get Greinke. So he's 35 years old. He's more than halfway through the 6-year contract he signed with the Diamondbacks prior to the 2016 season, and as the trade deadline approaches, he should be drawing a lot of interest if he is available. So it talks a little bit about how his fastball velocity has declined to under 90 miles an hour, easily in the bottom 10% of MLB starters, but he's got a 5-pitch mix and 6 if you count the super slow Ephus curveballs. But it talks a lot about his statistics and how great he's been and how he's become just a very crafty pitcher, even if he doesn't have the velocity that he used to. So a lot of money involved in it, obviously. 6-year, $206 million deal. You'd still have a few years left of that. But the teams he's got listed: Braves, Phillies, Stros, Brewers, Cardinals, Rangers, Twins. He does not have the Yankees listed here. But give me your thoughts maybe on the Greinke market in general, where you might expect him to land.
Well, either you or Mr. Simon left out quite a few details there. He has a 15-team no-trade list. So yep. There's a lot more teams on that list than others that's there. His contract
He has it here. Yeah.
His contract is crushingly big. It's over $30 million a year. All right, so he's not going anywhere. He's not unless they go. Yeah. Unless Diamondbacks are going to eat a lot of salary or take nothing back in return. He's just not going to go anywhere. They're also forgetting that he has an anxiety problem, which means any big market team would have to be extremely wary, Yankees, Red Sox, of taking him. Those are mainly East Coast teams. He seems to be okay with the Dodgers. But East
largest
Coast teams are big
market.
Time.
It depends how you measure it, I suppose. But the largest market, obviously, city-wise, is Houston. But Philly I would consider to be a high-pressure market.
Philly would never, ever be a match for him. That'd be a disaster with those fans. They'd crush him with a one bad inning. One of those one bad start, he couldn't go there. And I think the Phillies press would know that. The Yankees wouldn't take on that salary because they don't want to crush the cap. But the Yankees are going to be all in on, I had to think on Gerrit Cole in the offseason to be their ace. He's a free agent, so I expect that to happen there. Like I said, I doubt he goes anywhere. There's always a chance that there's somebody who does want to eat some salary, or that they can come to some kind of degree. All right, you eat $10 million of the salary, we'll give you lesser prospects, that sort of thing. But he is going to be a very, very difficult pitcher to move, a very difficult one. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think Rob Ray would have a much better chance. Guy you could argue is he has probably better stuff than Greinke at this point in his career. It's not a better pitcher than he is, but he's also not going to go have the salary that Greinke has. That contract makes Greinke pretty close to untradeable. It would be really, I mean, there'd be a lot of mechanisms, a work in progress here. This is not a trade that can be started on, you know, July 30th and be worked out the day before. Teams got to be starting to talk about this deal now and to get all the details worked out before the deadline, which is now 10 days away. So I don't expect, I'd be surprised if Greinke was moved. That's the bottom line here, because of the money. It's not because of the talent. You know, it's the money and the no trade clause and the fact that he has this anxiety issue. So I don't think Greinke's going anywhere.
$62.5 million in deferred money is going to be paid out in annual installments of $12.5 million from 2022 through 2026. So if you were to take on the entire salary, it doesn't necessarily blow you up each year. It's still a lot of money, obviously. You're paying the guy $21 million each year up until that contract goes away, but you're going to owe him a lot of money after that contract runs out, because there's a lot of deferred money involved. Like, you know, the Phillies, Andrew Simon even says here, they're on his list of the 15 teams that are being blocked. But as he states here, these tend to be put together strategically with an eye toward gaining leverage rather than shutting down the possibility of a trade. So I obviously, as you know, and the listeners should know, you can obviously be on a player's no trade list. Let's just say hypothetical. The Phillies, as stated here, are one of the teams he doesn't want to be traded to. If that possibility comes up, you can talk to Greinke. You can say, well, yeah, I'll remove them if I get this concession or whatever. Or if he decides at this point, you know what, Philly's fine now. You stated adequately that it's probably going to be a disaster if that were to happen. But some of these 15 teams could be removed if he and the teams decide that they can work something out and he's okay with going to said city.
Correct. Like buying a new car, everything's negotiable. And yes, Baumgartner and his no trade list, same thing. It's all strategic about wanting to get something to go there, whether it's $1 million to waive it, you know, or whatever he wants to get from his new team. Generally, it's the old team that has to pay it. They're the ones that really have that want the deal. So they'll pay the fee, whatever it's going to cost you. Obviously, with Greinke, it may not be money. He's making a truckload. Maybe it is something else. I don't know. I want luxury suites. I want my own suite on the roof, whatever it might be. You know, but like I said, Greinke going to Philadelphia, could certainly use him. Lord knows, there it is. I mean, what they saw, signed Wade Miley this week, traded for Mike Morin. Good luck there. I'm sure they'll pitch Drew real Smiley. Well in that bandbox. So it's just that it's not going to – Greinke a match in Philadelphia? No. I mean, that would be fun to watch, because those fans would – like I said, one bad start, they'd be all over. I mean, how Greinke would handle that would just be interesting, to say the least.
Yeah. So one guy that's being talked about a lot is Matt Boyd from the Tigers. John Heyman, according to John Heyman yesterday, the Tigers are, at least in some cases, are asking teams for an established young MLB star, not just prospects. I don't think they get it, but know that it's a seller's market. Boyd has a big K-to-walk rate, 6.67. That's a top in the American League, and three more years before free agency. So a ton of control. He's 28 years old. And Matt Boyd seems to be the guy that will get moved. It's just who's going to pay the highest price.
Yeah, I think Heyman's wrong. I don't think it's a seller's market at all. It's even neutral. You can say it's a buyer's market. There are a lot of starters out there to grab. And Boyd is not an ace. And nope. He's not the number one starter out there. You can make it argument he's the fourth starter out there, behind Baumgartner, Bauer, Stroman. I mean, Boyd strikes out a lot of batters. You just put the numbers aren't good of late. He's pitching pretty awful. He's giving up a lot of runs there. Now, maybe he just needs a change of scenery out of Detroit. Certainly can't blame that, you know, for where that team's going. But Detroit's going to want a mint for him. You mentioned for the Yankees, they want the Gleyber Torres plus. And the Yankees pretty much left. Yeah, you're not going to get Gleyber Torres for him. Straight up. More or less Gleyber Torres plus. You can ask for whatever you want. I mean, it's July 21st. You can ask for the moon. This price will come down by the deadline if indeed they do want to move him. But they don't have to move him now. You know, if I'm a Tigers, you have to think about this. If you want to trade somebody now, this is for any team. You want to trade somebody now, you're only going to have 12, 15 teams really bidding on the player, teams that are in contention. You wait till the offseason, you could have 29 teams interested.
True.
Yeah, so maybe you're better off waiting there. Like you just said it. They have control for 3 more years. And he's not afraid. Trevor Bauer's a little different. Arbitration. Baumgartner's different. He's a free agent. So they really do need to be moved now. And someone like Trevor Bauer, yes, the Cleveland would keep him in arbitration, but he's a free agent at the next year. You'll get more value trading him now because a team acquiring him gets him for 2 pennant races,
yeah,
not one. That's why his value is higher now. It gets less in the offseason. Boy, you have 3 more years. So 3 pennant races, 4 pennant races.
They really don't have to move him, to your point. The Detroit just doesn't have to move him. They say, "Why not? All right, this is the best offer we got at the trade deadline, but we think we can get a better one at winter meetings, so we're just going to wait." So,
and you can make an argument that he's, the fact that he's pitching so poorly now that his value's come down a bit, that they should wait.
Yeah, so to George's point, 6.08 ERA with a 2.7 home runs per nine mark over his past 8 starts, bumping his season numbers to 4.13 and 1.6 respectively in those categories. So he is the 4th best K percentage amongst qualified pitchers, but it's hard to ignore those struggles. Okay, Rays reportedly willing to deal for a rental player. It's again, according to Tampa Bay Times' Mark Topkin. General Manager Eric Neander as saying, probably the most visible thing that stands out is through the guys we have or potentially through upgrades. We have to find a way to either separate tight games offensively or lock them down on pitching, on the pitching half of innings, certainly late. It's one of those two things. So,
thanks for that.
Thanks.
Is it every game that way?
I was going to say, it's really enlightening. I don't know why I read that quote, but I did. So I can't look back. So, they've fallen back, obviously, a lot since. I think it's up to a 9.5-game lead for the Yanks now. So the Rays continuing to kind of do what they do, you know, stay competitive on this low budget, trade to get, not trade to rebuild, at least not at this stage. So we'll see what kind of mix they're in. The Nationals are interested in a couple of bullpen arms, Tigers Shane Green and the Giants Sam Dyson, 2 hurlers with 1 year of arbitration eligibility remaining. Washington's relief corps has performed better of late, but the team still has the second highest bullpen ERA, 5.97, in the major, so it makes sense they would target late inning arms. So Nats in on one of those guys. I've been saying since I drafted Shane Green, it's just a matter of time before he gets moved. I'm somewhat surprised it hasn't happened yet, but we got 10 days, and I don't understand why the Tigers would hang on to the closer with north of 20 saves.
I agree with you, but I thought Shane Green would be moved last year, maybe the year before that. Yeah. It's not that he's not great. He's not a lockdown closer, so I'm surprised he hasn't been dealt before as far as Mr. Green's gone. That's not a knock on him. He's a decent setup, man, I think, for a contending team. But yeah, you just said it once again. He's got 1 year left in arbitration. His value is more now than if you wait till next trade deadline or an offseason here. I don't think in the offseason you'd get much for him because everybody knows it's Shane Green. You know, it's not, you know, Chapman, Kimbrel, Jansen, someone like that. It's Shane Green.
His hot market is right now, to your point.
Deal.
It's right now.
Move him.
Right. I'm somewhat surprised that it didn't happen already. Anyway, Yankees, Braves and Yankees had scouts at on hand for Minor's start on Friday. So Mike Minor, he's posting a 2.6 ERA with 131 strikeouts in 129 innings. Also just signed for $9.83 million next year. So Mike Minor has been one of those names bandied about quite a bit during this trade situation. You think that's the type of guy the Yankees would add?
Well, first off, I don't care when people say, oh, these scouts write these games. Scouts write all the games.
I agree.
The scout things means absolutely nothing. That's just somebody trying to build up attention here. Oh, these scouts write, you know, scouts write all the games, folks. You don't think scouts are watching every Baumgartner start, every Stroman start, every Bauer start? Of course they are. So that means nothing. As far as what they did, the Yankees, no, because mine is no better than what they have. You know, the Yankees aren't playing for the Regulson. They have that locked up. They need playoff starters, and Minor's not that. You know, I don't know if that's really out there for the Yankees to be able to grab. I don't know if Baumgartner, if they're going to pay that price. They're going to pay the price for Stroman, whose price has gotten higher now, not less. You know, are they going to pay the price for Bauer? You know, do they want Bauer? A player who's, because, you know, Bauer's got a quirky personality. And the fact that he wants to go on these one-year deals, which means the Yankees can never sign him long-term. Bauer's playing one-year deals are great for the player if you stay healthy. You will maximize your potential, your profit, your money. 1 year deals are how you do that, but of course it's a huge gamble. You get hurt, you know, Matt Harvey, and your career's done. And you don't have that long term security. Not that he hasn't made enough money already to be secure, but you know, rather than get a $150 million contract, you're hoping you know, to reach that over 4 or 5 years by maximizing one-year deals. It's a gamble, especially when it comes to pitching there. But will the Yankees give up what it takes to get these guys? The Yankees want to headline any trade around Clint Frazier. Now, granted, I like Clint Frazier. I think he is a major league ball player, but it's going to take more than that probably to get any of these guys. And I don't know if the Yankees are willing to pay that price, as I said, for Bumgarner, who might leave after one season. For Bauer, who you might only have for a year and a half before he's going to want the big money. Stroman, same thing. You know, and so do you feel someone like Stroman, for instance, is worth giving up Frazier and another good piece for a guy who's been a little bit better than an average starter? Yeah, I don't think either. You know, Bumgarner, I wouldn't pay that. Bumgarner is not the Bumgarner he was a couple of years ago. Pitching a little bit better now, but not the Bumgarner he used to be, or else I'd feel differently here. Also, the Yankees have to look at it. If you were to acquire Bumgarner, how many left-handers are you going to have in this rotation? Bumgarner, Paxton, Happ, CeCe, they're all left-handers. I mean, Tanaka's your only right-hander, and Domingo Germán, who they've already said is going to be on an innings limit. That would seem to indicate that he's going to be done at some time in August, or maybe he goes to the bullpen to protect him for the playoffs.
Does that increase your thought process? Like, Mike Minor isn't a difference maker, but the fact that Germán is out, do the Yankees settle for somebody like that to eat up some innings if Germán has to get moved out of the starting rotation? I mean, we're bearing down.
Why would you give up any prospects for it?
Right. Nobody's serious. That's the problem.
Right. That's the thing. You're not giving up anybody good for it because you don't need it. You can't win
a
playoff.
It's a luxury.
It's a luxury. And you can get that through with your minor leaguers. The Yankees have a 10-game lead.
I was just about to say,
lead.
You can bring up a chance at
them. 10-game lead. Right. They don't need to win regular. They need the postseason. This is why, I'm a Yankee fan, but I don't think the Yankees will win the World Series because the Yankees can't match up with Garrett Cole and Justin Verlander.
Do you think the Yankees go out and get one of these guys?
I don't know.
The top guys, Bumgarner, Bauer.
It's going to cost more than Clint Frazier. I don't think Frazier can – maybe Stroman. Frazier might be able to highlight Stroman.
Do you think
Stroman.
He's a difference maker? You don't seem to think that. I don't think it.
Not a difference maker. I mean, he's better than – I would say he's better than Happ, better than CeCe. I would put Paxton ahead of him. He's better than – you brought it up earlier. You started to hit that Tanaka. Tanaka's got the wins, but his ERA, especially if you don't count Jason Collette, by the way, if you follow him on Twitter, loves to point out that if you don't count Tanaka's games against the Rays, his ERA is north of 5. He's getting destroyed by most teams. The Yankees outscoring teams. You know, when he pitches, Tucker's not really pitching well. Gets up a lot of home runs, and Collette's right. You take out those race starts. And I understand we can play that game with everything. Well, you take this out. You know, it's like the old football thing. Well, you take out the 60-yard run. He only had 48 yards that day. Well, you can play that game with everybody. Take out the big run. That's the way it is. Yeah. But in Tanaka's case, it shows you, he's going to struggle against better teams. You know, and he's not really pitching all that great. So I get the point they're trying to make. But is Stroman better than Tanaka? Sure. Is he immensely better? No. You know, he's a number 3 starter? You know, the Yankees really needed a number 1 or a number 2. Bumgarner would make sense because maybe he is that guy in the playoffs again, that bulldog you need. Bauer, I think, certainly could be at least a number 2. He would make sense. And you think about it, if you acquire one of these guys, and Severino can come back. I understand it's a huge if. And once again, you play in this game. But if Severino can come back and be with Severino, he should be fresh arm and all. Well, then you have something. You know, then you have something with someone like Bauer and Severino going up against Verlander and Cole. You know, you might be able to match them somewhat. But other than that, that's why, you know, people forget playoffs for a short series. 7 games. If you can't beat Verlander, and the Yankees haven't beaten them all year, was he 3-0 against them fairly easily going through them? You can't beat Verlander. That's, you're already 2 games down. And you can make an argument that Cole's better than Verlander. Certainly of late, he's pitched very well. You know, those two alone can win a series. Game's a series over.
Can't disagree with anything you just said. I do think that as good as the Yankees have been, none of this has really mattered. We know that they can bludgeon everybody in the regular season. And now we'll be looking to see if it can come together somehow in the playoffs. But I think even the most ardent Yankee fans would sit there and tell you, like, I don't know if this is going to work out in October for the reasons that you mentioned. Maybe they somehow duck Houston. I don't see how that's going to happen. But that's what you'd have to hope for. It's just a bad matchup for them. Talk about matchups and playoffs all the time. And that would be yet another bad one. Keep talking baseball. Turn it over to the Hall of Fame, which inductions are today. It's George Loves. We'll be right back.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your Daily Roto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Back on Weekend Fantasy Update. Thanks for listening on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, iHeart Radio, TuneIn Radio. It's Mike and George. We're here until 12. George will take keep going with Cam Stewart on Weekend Wagers from 12 to 3. So you got a lot of action here today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Speaking of action on the golf course, Shane Lowry, 5-stroke lead now in the British Open, the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. I was pushing for Fleetwood. I had a little bit of action on Fleetwood. He's 5 strokes back. It's Lowry's tournament to lose, obviously. They're finishing up the third hole now, I believe, or the fourth hole now. So Lee Westwood, 6 strokes off the lead. Ricky Fowler, 7 strokes off. Brooks Koepka, yeah, he's had a tough start to the day. Already plus 4. So Koepka is 11 strokes out. So for those wondering if he can make a comeback, it would have to be something miraculous. And it's really Shane Lowry had a 4-stroke lead. Fleetwood was the only one within 5 strokes. He still is that only one within 5 strokes, but he's now 5 back, being plus 1 on the day. I think Lowry's going to take it easy. He missed a ton of fairways yesterday, but hit the greens in regulation on 17 of 18. So Lowry playing excellent golf. Pretty cool moment for him. He literally drove to the course. His house is 3 hours from the course, so he drove up there. It'd be a cool moment. George, I know you're not the biggest golf watcher, but you like to play. It'd be cool for a guy to win. It's not his home course, but, you know, an Irish golfer to win in Northern Ireland would be pretty cool.
Sure. Oh, it's always nice to drive anyway. You know, ball players, when they go, you know, drive to a game because they're playing in their hometown or whatever. It's always nice to win close to home. Always.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. So today's Hall of Fame induction. Today is the day for the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. Good luck if you're in Cooperstown. I hope you're enjoying it, but you better be in the shade, well hydrated, because today's going to be brutal. I've seen these guys really sweat it out before. But today is going to be really interesting because it is steaming hot outside. And these induction ceremonies are going to get started at 11 o'clock, it looks like. And the inductions will start at 1:30. They're expecting a record turnout of 54 different Hall of Famers to come back and greet this class. So you have closers, Mariano Rivera, the first ever unanimous induction. Lee Smith, who gets in on a veterans committee vote, or whatever it's called, today's game committee vote. You have designated hitters Edgar Martinez and Harold Baines, Mike Messina, and the late Roy Halladay. So a lot of interesting names on there. I was certainly happy that Messina got in, because even though when you look through his career, he didn't receive the accolades that some of the other elite pitchers did getting into the Hall of Fame, he had a very long, consistent, very good to great career. Now, this is where I know you start to get, you bristle at the very good, but perhaps you would classify it as great. Messina had an excellent career. I just think some of the accolades maybe fall short of what other people have as the benchmark for guys to get.
Well, once again, it's not the Hall of Fame. It is the Hall of Very Good. That's the way it is. You know, some of these guys have got elected. It's kind of a joke. They shouldn't. It's, in my mind, the whole thing, it's the best of the best. You know, these guys are the greatest of the greatest. I mean, I'm not talking everybody has to be Babe Ruth or, you know, Stan Musial, Clemente, you know, DiMaggio. I'm not saying it's Ted Williams. But, you know, you can't be guys who are just very good ball players. You know, and that's in my mind, it's people who get in nowadays. You know, Rivera, sure, absolutely. I'm sure Goose Gossage would have something to say about Rivera getting in, but just a different game than when he played. Everybody else here, sorry, not seeing it. You know, Lee Smith, well, maybe a couple of years he was the dominant reliever of his era, but other than that, this guy was more of a compiler than anything else. Harold Baines, I loved Harold Baines. Nowhere near close to a Hall of Famer.
Harold Baines was a really tough hit for the Hall of Fame.
But he's not the only one. It's been going on for years. Harold Baines got it because Tony La Russa really campaigned for him.
This is true.
And it's a joke. I mean, the way I look at it, if I'm looking at a list, if you're not an automatic check mark and I have to think about it, then you're probably not in. You know, maybe some guys I got to check because I might have forgotten about how good they were, something like that. But if I had to truly think about it, then you're not in. It's just that simple. It's the Hall of Fame. So that's why I don't care anymore. I just don't care. Too many guys have gotten in over the past 20 years. Before I would take guys out before I put anybody else in. That's the way I look at it here. I mean, to me, it's gotten to be kind of a joke. You know, it's just like, oh, what silly person they're going to put in this year? That sort of thing.
You and I are mostly on the same page with this across all the Halls of Fame and sort of postseason, rather regular season awards and all that kind of stuff. The voting is so wonky at times that I've learned over time as a sports fan to not get fired up about it because you'll never be satisfied with it. There's these subjective votes that now I have friends that argue, but we should care about it. We should care about the Hall of Fame and they've made a joke of it or whatever. I understand that, but I'm not going to be able to change that. So I tend not to get fired up. George and I both were on the same page. We thought Kurt Warner, certainly Terrell Davis would not have been in for us. Kurt Warner Hall of Fame. I thought he was a really interesting debate, but that was a tough one too. On the baseball side of things, just this class, taking this class, I'm out on Hal Baines. He got in because he's got friends in the right places. Lee Smith, he led the majors in career saves when he retired. So that there is something to be said for that. But as George said, was he really dominant? Like Mariano Rivera is the best closer in the league for almost every year that he was in the league, right? Maybe there was a year where Eric Gagne had better stats, but nobody thought that Eric Gagne had supplanted Mariano Rivera as the best reliever. His postseason stats alone are just jaw-dropping when you look at them. And he wasn't perfect, but they were unbelievable. Messina, I thought, was a really interesting test case as well. He's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I believe. Six top fives in Cy Young voting. That's obviously subjective as well. But 18 years, 270 wins. He led the league in wins one time. He never led the league in ERA.
He's very, very good. I just don't think, you know, when I'm thinking of the guys who are,
he was an excellent fielder.
You know, when we want somebody to start game seven of the World Series, Messina doesn't come to mind. He just doesn't. You know, he's a very good pitcher, but I don't know about a Hall of Famer here.
Very often, though, George, was getting matched up against some of the greatest pitchers. It seemed like on a regular basis he was going up against Pedro. Yeah.
You know, he was an ace. But then again, that doesn't happen very often in baseball. People forget and think that. That's actually not true. You know, after opening day, the schedules are all wonky after that. Off days, raining out. You don't want anything that's number one very often. It's more luck of the draw.
Mathematically, it
works out even, so I don't want to hear that. Yeah, only in playoffs does that happen. Or opening day, or after the All-Star break, maybe. And even that's thrown out the window now, too, with teams giving their pitchers extra rest. So that's – I don't want to hear that. But like I said, Messina is I wouldn't rail against Messina. You know, if you're going to rant that he shouldn't be in there. Harold Baines, I would. You know, other guys. Messina, in my mind, is probably borderline. But the way I look at it, if you're borderline, you're not in. That's just the way it is for me. You have to be, this guy's easy. You know, Chipper Jones, absolutely. Derek Jeter, absolutely. You know, easy picks. If I have to think about it, as soon as I say I have to think about it, unless I honestly can't remember his stats, I have to look him up, it's a no. I lean towards no. I almost always lean towards no. Now I need to be convinced to yes. That's just the way I am for the whole thing. I think that's the way it should be. I think if you have to think about it, you're probably not a Hall of Famer. Now, you brought up Terrell Davis in football. I know it's a different sport, but and the reason I'm against Terrell Davis being in the Hall of Fame, he had a Hall of Fame couple of years. That's it. He only played 7 years in the NFL, and three were well below at par. He had 3 good years in the NFL. He had 1,500 yards, 1,700 yards, 2,000 yards. He had Hall of Fame 3 years. Is that enough to be in the Hall of Fame? Because you had 3 great years? To me, that's crazy. This baseball, they don't do that. You know, Theron Munson can't get in because he really didn't play long enough. Don Mattingly can't get in because he didn't play long enough due to injuries and obviously Theron Munson passed away.
Football went sideways with their Hall of Fame when they started creating minimums that they had to be a certain number of guys elected in each year.
Yes.
You start pushing the bar
that's
like
silly.
That, you're going to put guys in that don't deserve to be there. And that's really when it started to go sideways. And it also created this logjam at wide receiver where you were keeping guys out who obviously should have been in. Like Chris Carter had to wait around a long time. Art Monk waited around forever to get in. It's like, well, stop with the other stuff. Forcing guys in, you feel like you have to have maybe a wide receiver this year and a running back this year and a quarterback. It puts the voters in an awkward scenario where they're putting guys in that maybe at a position where they feel like they need to put somebody in, as opposed to putting Chris Carter in the first time around. Because why
football
would you
is also strange. There's a lot of strange stuff that goes on in football Hall of Fame voting. You know, we've heard for years a lot of backroom dealing and guys who are maybe blackballed, not going to get in. Other guys who get in when they should. Football is strange.
Plus, the voting works as like a devil's advocate. So, like somebody like Peter King says, "All right, they'll present for Terrell Davis." Hypothetical. I'm not saying he did that, but they basically build the case almost like an attorney would. They build the case for the guy, and then everybody votes. There's
that's
a couple
weird.
Of guys. It is a weird process. It's different from the other stuff where baseball is just a ballot that you send in. I can't remember who the Hall of Famers are this year. I can't remember who they are this year. Here it is. I'm bringing it up because I want to remember who it was that they talked about where it was the
Football is always going to be strange because, you know, how do you vote for an offensive lineman? You know, there are no stats for an offensive lineman. You know, no stats you can just read. You can't read. He hit 320 over his career, hit 518 home runs, you know, and that sort of thing. So offensive line can be tough there. You know, how do you judge players in this day and age? You know, where it's all about the passing because the rules have changed dramatically. You can't compare, you know, quarterbacks from anyway even 2000s to the quarterbacks of the 70s and 60s and 70s because the game has changed. Which it has in all sports, by the way. That's why people who love their numbers, the old numbers are all bull crap. All right? The game's changed too much over the past 50 years. Human beings have changed so much over the past 50 years. We're playing so much bigger, stronger, faster nowadays. That's why I always laugh when people say, oh, the 70s Steelers would beat the 2000 Patriots. The 70s Steelers wouldn't beat the 2019 Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals would crush the Steelers. All right? The players are so much bigger.
And you know,
they'd be able to run the ball down with Steelers' throats.
Where Alabama could beat, you know, the worst team or Clemson could beat the worst team in the NFL. That's it'd be a non-competitive game every time. Doesn't matter how many pros come out of Clemson or Alabama in a given season. The whole team aren't professional football players, and it won't be. Everybody in the NFL is professional football players. So
exactly.
That's why those arguments become silly. I believe it was Ed Reed earlier this year when they went through it I'm conflating it between last year when they presented Ray Lewis's resume. I think it was the shortest period of time that it took everybody to approve a player. They just went through his resume, what he had won and all the things that he had done, and everybody was like, he's in. They didn't usually, there's a debate, a sort of devil's advocate scenario or anything or whatever you want to call it in the NFL. There was no sort of counter argument as far as.
And that's fine. There's certain places there shouldn't be. You know, their Hall of Fame is, you know, Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, regardless of the fact that Ray Lewis should probably be in jail, and if he wasn't rich, he probably would be. They're Hall of Fame players. I have no problem with it. Once again, those are the guys you look at, check easy. I don't need to have a debate on that. I don't know why the NFL does a debate thing. To me, that's silly. You know, but I think the way the baseball does it is probably better, the ballot. I don't like the rule of 10 in baseball because, once again, I think that hurts. Because I think that's why you get certain guys don't vote for certain players. You know, think about baseball. Now, most of the ballots then were published, which is why Rivera got in unanimously, because no one wanted to hear, you know, all the backlash that would have happened. But in years past, certain guys, it wouldn't have happened for certain players, even though they were locked in, didn't have a Ken Griffey. And we all know he was a Hall of Famer. Now, some people don't put guys in because they don't believe anybody should get on the first ballot. All right, that's stupid. But other times, a player like Ken Griffey may not have gotten a vote. I may not have voted for Ken Griffey, not because I don't think Griffey could have gotten in, but because I know everyone else is going to vote for him. So fine, I can leave him off my ballot. And I can put 10 other guys on there. And then maybe my 10th guy, if I didn't vote for him, he might fall off the ballot. Or it's his last year of eligibility. I'm trying to get that guy in. And I understand that logic. I get that. The rule of 10 is why they call it that. And that probably should go away, too. It's sort of the opposite of what baseball does, what football does. With football, they want to get a certain amount, and baseball guys could fall off, and they shouldn't. That sort of thing. And I think that needs to go away as well. But I think also, what both these Hall of Fames like is that we're talking about it.
Yeah.
there's no bad publicity. Same thing.
Yeah. Would you have Dale Murphy in the Hall of Fame?
He's a guy I'd have to look up again to see if I would put him in. He's certainly on that Mussina thing where he's damn close, but I probably lean no. Once again, if I don't have you automatically, and I sort of lean no, but he's a guy I would give a look, and you could convince me of Dale Murphy. But I'd have to look at his stats again.
Back-to-back MVPs,
no.
5 Gold Gloves.
I never care about any awards. That's all bull crap too.
398 career homers.
That's what I care about. Numbers. So what is the number that
retired? He retired in 93. The last 2 years, he barely played. Really the end of his career.
98 homers in his day and age was a hell of a lot.
It was a lot. It was a ton. I think he was trying to get to 400. He just couldn't do it in that final season. He played in Colorado in 1993. I never would have guessed that. But 265 career batting average, 1,200 RBIs. Very, very good numbers, but I think there's a reason why he's been left out all these years. He won the two MVPs, but he was like one of the best outfielders through the 80s, and that's always something that I think of from a positional standpoint. Where did he rank amongst his fellow outfielders
in his time period? Absolutely. I'm big on that too, Mike. I don't care about comparing him to the 40s and 50s or guys of today. How about his
seven
time
All-Star
period?
Teams? Yeah. Seven All-Star
Once
teams.
Once again, the All-Star. Don't get me started on the All-Star teams.
That's an accolade that it doesn't really matter because he's popular. Then he's winning two MVPs. People are going to vote for him, so that doesn't necessarily boost your resume. But it's just another thing to throw on the pile. But that's why I always thought Murphy should be in. I mean
I could be convinced of Murphy. I could definitely be convinced.
Cool. All right, we're going to talk football in hour number two. Shane Lowry with a 5-stroke lead in the Open.